Thank you for this opportunity.
So I'm from a small town down south called Kyoto. Who likes Kyoto? Anyone? Great. And who likes short-term rental investing? All right. So if you are Tracy, huh? So yeah, if you like one of those two things, hopefully this speech will be for you. So I got a lot of content today, so I'm going to push as fast as I can and try and cover a bunch of things about the Kyoto market and a few other thoughts if we have time. Just to introduce myself, as this is the first opportunity to speak at this event. So I'm born and raised in Sydney, Australia. My mother is Japanese. She's from Osaka, actually. I have a Bachelor of Laws and a Bachelor of Business Finance, and I moved to Japan in 2007, so some 18 years back. Initially, I was in Kyoto, and then I worked in Osaka for 7 years in financial analysis and strategy, but always had a big passion for travel. I've been to about 65 countries, about 4 years' worth of travel, I think, as well as most of the prefectures in Japan. And it was that first year in Kyoto when I was there when I saw the Machia and I thought, there's really something here. But at the time, too young, too broke, no network, unfortunately, because if I had picked a few up, I probably wouldn't be here today. But yeah, I started renting out my personal apartment, just threw it on Airbnb while I was traveling in 2013. And I thought, oh, there's something here. So that was back in the good old days. So at the time, we had 10.4 million inbound tourists into Japan in 2013. And I was feeling like the Japanese tourism product was one that was going to run a lot higher. I also felt like Kyoto would be a key player in this story. And turns out I got a couple of things right. But I'd just like to point out at that time when I entered the industry, already a few people told me you're too late. So never be discouraged when people tell you that kind of garbage. All right. So I started this company in 2014. So it's our 11th year this year. And I really like the older historical structures and would love to protect as many as possible. I seem to be constantly fighting against domestic developers who want to switch them out for prefabs. I also really want to promote positive immigration into Japan and economic growth. So I think doing tourism and doing tourism in regional areas can assist all of these things. As a company, we are definitely focused on the Kyoto market and continuing to focus there, but my personal interests are drifting also outside to rural areas. So I'm working on a number of projects there, and if we have time today, I'll touch on those lightly. Okay, just to introduce my company. So we're called Shiki Group, and our main office is in Kyoto. We're also opening an office in Nagano shortly. I'll touch on that later. We've got two websites for the two divisions of the companies as above. Currently, we have about 40 staff and 45 short-term rentals and monthly rentals, as well as two boutique hotels. Current pipeline is 17 more short-term rentals and four boutique hotels. So basically, the company has two major divisions. The Shiki Properties is the management arm of the business, where we mainly manage short-term rentals or those smaller hotels. And they are usually owned by various owners. So we are a management company or operator, as we call it, in the industry. And yeah, just wanted to make one point was during COVID, a lot of my competitors terminated a lot of staff, some of them, all of their staff, for whatever reason. I terminated no staff, and that's really helped catapult the company post-COVID, and we've managed to triple our revenue since then, and I'm really happy about the decision I make there. The other part of our business is as a brokerage. And we generally work with STR type properties, and that kind of ties into the management side of our business. So we're able to use the data from the management to help clients make good decisions to purchase properties that are going to be both have capital appreciation opportunities as well as strong yield. We are able to offer services in Japanese, English, and Chinese. And of course, we have some great partners in town that we can introduce you to, such as tax, licensing, legal, things like that. Okay, so why invest in Kyoto? So Kyoto is the number two tourism market in Japan. It has timeless beauty and culture. It's a culinary capital. Certain parts of it are definitely more affordable than Tokyo. There's a lot of schooling in Kyoto, so that's a big plus. And basically, it's about a 30-minute travel from anywhere in the town to nature. So surrounded by mountains. And so, you know, it's 30 minutes and you feel like a world away. So it's a nice refresher. A Kyoto investment can be used both for as an investment, but also you can get some great personal use out of it. And of course, we have huge international appeal at the moment, but the domestic appeal has always been very strong for Kyoto. And finally, it's a low disaster risk zone, lower risk of earthquakes. So this photo that I've chosen here, everybody would be familiar with this particular shot, but there's a reason behind why I've chosen this photo. So we were lucky enough to broker the building with the round window in the middle of this shot. It's one of Kyoto's most iconic shots. So that was one of the best deals that we've been involved with. We actually did that house. And the building next door for an undisclosed sum. But yeah, really proud to have done that deal. And that was for a commercial operation. And so we also do, you know, commercial machias, and we are doing a little bit of residential as well these days. But the STR type property is our bread and butter. Okay, so I'm going to touch on a few Kyoto real estate market idiosyncrasies. The biggest one is that you can purchase culturally significant assets. So Kyomachiya are available for purchase, and it gives you a rare chance to invest in historic architecture. So the other thing is that, interestingly, with these Kyomachiya in particular, it's actually the structures themselves that have increased in value over time, not just the land. So we've had double price appreciation, particularly over the last 10 years. So it's the finite nature of the machia asset that has lifted the price of the structure itself. So these properties that used to be able to be purchased for 30 to 40 million in town about 10 years ago are now around the 70 to 100 million range. Separate to the structures, the land itself has appreciated quite a lot in Kyoto. Over the last 10 years, we've seen some of these prime areas, such as Gion and Higashiyama, double in value. So at the moment, we're looking at values up to a million yen per square meter. So I got a couple of stats coming up. The first one's just a little refresher on the Japan tourism market. So 2009, we had 6.8 million inbound travelers into Japan. This grew to 13.4 million in 2014, around when I started this company. And then pre-COVID, we peaked at 31.9 million. Last year, we broke that and hit 36.9 million, and the estimate this year is 40.2 million. So over that time, how has this impacted hotel ADRs? So ideally, I would have been able to put the short-term rental ADRs out, but the reality is that the data in this set of properties is unreliable or non-existent. So we usually use hotel ADRs as a proxy. So that's what I've gone with here. In 2009, hotel ADR was 9,200 yen in Kyoto. And this has trended up to 11,000 in 2014, then 13,500 in 2019 before this huge jump in 2024 of 20,200. So, what's caused this jump? It's definitely the huge boost in numbers, but also inflation, as well as yen depreciation. So, it's really caused a perfect storm, and things are reasonable in town right now. And just for reference, we're booking at almost 30,000 this year. So, it's been a good year so far, although it's coming off the rails a little bit, perhaps. So yeah, in terms of occupancy, you can see like a fairly similar pattern there. 2019 back down at 62% and trending up solidly to 2014, 69%, 78% in 2019. And then yeah, that's continued on to 2024. So it's very difficult to clear above a certain level of occupancy. You're always going to have a bit of loss, particularly in a very seasonal market like Kyoto. So, 78 is a fantastic result. You can make a lot of money at that level. For example, our main hotel, we did 84% last year. Pretty happy about that. Couple more stats. So in terms of hotel growth, from 2015 to 2023, there was a 62% growth in hotel rooms. I think they built like 100 hotels a year. So and yeah, very noticeable in town. But we went from 26,000 something rooms to close to 43,000. I did manage to find a few stats for short-term rental ADRs here, so I've shared them. So apparently the average is a 3 to 27,000. It's very imprecise. And just for reference, I checked last year, we did 40,800 average for our 365-day short-term rentals. There's a really varying market in Kyoto, from somewhat affordable to extreme luxury. So there's something for everyone there. In terms of profitability, properties that go on the market, you often see this 5 to 7% range. Obviously, it's fairly easy for us to calculate that. It would be quite difficult coming in cold to get a precise feel for it. I have got five examples of properties that are on the market that I'm going to share in the breakout session today. So if anyone's interested in seeing some live properties, I can share those then. So many of our owners have bought 5 to 6 years ago, and so it's interesting now looking back at how they've performed. A lot of them have enjoyed about 10% or more capital gains per year over this period, and they're earning 10% odd cash on cash yields. So you're talking 20% if you add those together, which is fantastic, and explains why many of them are coming back now for second properties and seem very happy. So actually, I've got five of these examples as well. I'm going to go through in the breakout room, and we'll look at things like the initial purchase price, the renovation price, and some operating data if you guys are interested, as well as the locations, things like that. So, seasonality in Kyoto, well, it seems quite obvious for people living there and running this kind of business. Perhaps it's not so obvious for those in Tokyo, and I understand, talking to Tokyo operators, that the seasonality is quite different between the two markets. It's a lot flatter in Tokyo, and it swings a lot wilder in Kyoto. So the peak seasons are Sakura season, just gone, March, April, and then Koryo. These two stand out by far. And I know, for example, in Tokyo, the Christmas period is huge, whereas it's nowhere near as big in Kyoto. May and October, best weather of the year, very strong months. July to August is the next rundown. Weather sucks. Some people still haven't caught on to it and coming in from Europe, but I feel like they're kind of catching on finally. It was a bit weak last year. And then June and September is definitely soft. And then we have the off season, which goes from really the start of December through to the middle of March, other than a small spike around Christmas, but not to the extent of Tokyo. So it's really very seasonal in Kyoto, and for that reason, dynamic pricing is even more important. You could achieve this perhaps through some use of some systems. Personally, we have an in-house proprietary system that we use that we think performs better than the off-the-shelf systems, but that's something that's a little bit difficult to replicate if you're a small operator. But either way, dynamic pricing super important. Okay, so Kyoto has a huge love for regulation, and they've extended this to the STR area as well. It's definitely the toughest STR regulations in Japan. And just to contrast that, Osaka next door is supposed to be the most lax in the country. So, and you know, I'm told that Tokyo is somewhere in between those, depending on the ward. So, in saying that, these traditional machiya houses, they have some lower regulations, and that is why they've become so popular as investment vehicles over these years. And it's really driven the price appreciation. So, yeah, in saying that, you know, the high barriers to entry in Kyoto, it's a double-edged sword. So on one hand, you kind of have to have a better renovation, and operation costs are significantly higher, and this means you need a property that has a higher ADR in order to cover these costs. So that creates a kind of a unique market in Kyoto. But because of the regulation and the fact that so many houses are blocked from getting licensed, you have less market saturation, and this does support occupancy and ADRs. Okay, so I just wanted to share some of the fun regulations that we have to endure on a daily basis. It's just a sample here, but one that is a huge headache is that you have to have a staff member that lives 800 meters from a property for no reason whatsoever. But if the path in front of your house is narrow, this 800 meters is reduced to like 100 meters or something like that. So, yeah, that's right. Good times. And then so another one, width of the path in front of your house has to be more than 1.5 meters, and the width of the facade of the property must be at least 2 meters. Okay, so if you have a non-machiya, you either have to have a manned internal check-in counter 24 hours a day while people are staying in the house, or, which is great for guests, as you can imagine, or an external check-in counter, also within 800 meters, with not one but two people 24 hours a day. And that counter can manage a maximum of 5 properties. If you go over 5, you need 3 people at all times 24 hours a day. So very reasonable regulations. Okay, further, if you are in what is classified as a residential zone, of which there are many in Kyoto, minpaku operations are restricted to but 60 days a year, all in the low season. Yes. So, and then now we have a new one at number 6, because we didn't have enough regulations, so got a few more. So, now we have this barrier-free regulation that's come in. And that does at times also apply to machiya. But if you remove an illegal extension on the machiya, and the machiya is built after 1950, this can be relaxed. And I just wanted to explain that a little bit. So the reason a lot of machiyas have an illegal extension is because traditionally they didn't have any bathing facilities, and people would go to the nearby sento. But over time, many people added an illegal extension so they could have a bath in their house. So it's actually very common for machiyas to have this illegal extension. So therefore, if you want to avoid this barrier free, now we are having to do this like big renovation to remove these extensions. So it's, yeah, very annoying. But yeah, it just kind of brings home that you have to be very careful and really fully understand these regulations when you're planning your renovation, or you can, you know, have a huge issue afterwards where you need a whole another huge renovation, or you just can't get a license, or these kinds of things. Yeah, another point is that steep staircases can invalidate your license, and almost every staircase is steep in Kyoto. So, and of course, they change the regulations all the time as well, which is great. So, yeah, I just wanted to give some advice on this point, in that we have come across a lot of people who have done a full renovation and not got a license. And that's not happened to any of our clients, but we've had these people come across after they get the bad news and ask us to fix it. We've fixed a few, but some of them were just beyond fixing. So basically, don't get yourself in this situation. Make sure you do the work before you commit the capital and the renovation to make sure you can get a license. And you can do this by using an experienced gyosei shoshi, a judicial scrivener, somebody who is very experienced in getting this specific type of license. That would be my strong recommendation, and that will reduce the risk of licensing mishaps. The other thing you can do is you can use an experienced local management company. I would recommend that. There's just a lot of regulations. They're changing every year. You'll find that real estate agents actually in Kyoto often don't understand the regulations because they're not dealing with them day to day. To toot our own horn, like, we obviously do the management as well, so we're in the mix all the time. We have a very good understanding of both sets of laws, but definitely don't try and save a few bucks and do it yourself. Partner with somebody who actually understands what's going on. So just to talk about the Kyoto market a little bit more, it's very competitive, and the renovation standards are very high, both in terms of design and quality. There's also a huge competition for good real estate, and there is finite real estate of this category in the town. So it's really difficult to secure good quality. Most of the good quality properties never hit the public market. They're all private. So if you are trying to enter the Kyoto market, find yourself a good broker who can secure these properties, get this information off the private market. Central location is super important for good performance. As soon as you cross this invisible line, your performance drops substantially, both in occupancy and ADR. So determining where this line is very important. In saying that, though, the definition of central has evolved over time. So I used to consider Horikawa, if anyone's familiar with that, as too far west, and now the market's moved substantially further west of that. So, you know, one thing to consider always is, what's it going to look like in 5 years' time, not just today? In terms of size, I highly recommend you avoiding direct competition with hotels. And this means that, you know, don't get something that's 2 to 3 person. Go for at least 4 people. 5 is better than 4, 6 is better than 5, 7 is better than 6 if you can do it. Minimum of 4. And then, so that means this 50 to 80 square meters is really the sweet spot. But to be honest, when we look at the data, above 80 is even better. So just to touch on a few things about our business. So our core business is the STR management. And because we have a lot of this data, we're able to help inform our clients about what the best properties would be to purchase in terms of both yield and the capital appreciation. We provide end-to-end support, the selection of the property, the purchase, licensing, renovation, full management, and at the end also sale. So while I got you guys here, I just want to take a couple of minutes and just share a few of my general thoughts. So I purchased this 70-year-old property 4 years ago. It's in the north of Kyoto, and it's a place called Kyotango, a very beautiful area. And just put some before and after shots up there. So we always work with architects and designers. So this was my one chance to stuff it up because it's my own money. So I went ahead and did the design myself. Apparently, some of my friends think I did okay. So just sharing that. So yeah, it's a really beautiful town. And my main point was that if you live in Japan, you too can have a beautiful countryside property. And I think actually it's one of the biggest perks of living in this country is you can have something at an extremely reasonable value that will lift your life quality like it's lifted mine. So I highly recommend it. And we just happen to have something in this lovely village if anyone's interested. And having that property in the Japan Sea side has really even further increased my passion for the rural areas. So I'm working on a bunch of developments in rural towns now, and I think there's going to be a huge surge in tourism, particularly in percentage terms in these areas. So if anyone's interested to check out some of the stuff I'm doing, you can follow me on LinkedIn. And also, Niseko has become prohibitively expensive. I feel like that's going to have flow-on implications for the other ski field areas and particularly Nagano. So we are opening a Nagano office that will be offering the same service as we do in Kyoto in terms
We
of the
need you
brokerage.
so much on that,
Ah,
please.
good timing, it sounds like. So yeah, that's going to be run by a friend of mine. He's got 15 years experience in the ski fields. We're just kind of getting it set up, but we are operational as we speak. So targeting like Nozawa, Madarao, Myoko, these kind of places. Just looking at the numbers, it looks like there's definitely opportunities for capital appreciation and some great yield. And in the breakout session to fellow, I'll be going through some management case studies, looking at income, costs, occupancies, and also some live properties on the market if anyone is interested. And that's it. Thank you very much. And the QR code
Thank
there
you.
is my LinkedIn. And yeah, take some questions if there are any.
Yes, please raise your hands. No questions the stream yet, but I've got one question. Sorry, while people are thinking about theirs. You mentioned there all of those draconic regulations that you've got in Kyoto. We haven't worked with you yet on any short-term stay. We've worked with you and still working with you on monthly stays there, which are a lot easier, but why are you doing it if it's such a pain in the bum? Is my first question. And the second question is, I'm assuming based on that, there's a minimum value of property slash property plus renovation that you would say is might be feasible in Kyoto. Like, what's the minimum price that people should be looking at for something that would comply?
Okay, so why am I doing it? Probably because I didn't know how hard it was before we started. But you know, it's a funny place, Kyoto. It's really its own thing. There's no need for it to be so overregulated, but you know, it is extremely popular. So the regulation actually holds back the competition because it's so difficult to operate. So it does actually, if you are able to operate, it does boost your performance. And I think, you know, we're specialists in Kyoto, so we have, you know, a certain moat there. So, you know, that's why I'm doing it. I think in terms of investment, you know, you can get a very secure investment over the land value and some very good yield as well. So I think it does make sense as a market. And in terms of, yeah, the other part of the question, recommended investment value. A lot of the properties we see at the moment, the lower end is that 70 million kind of range for like a renovated property. If you want to get something unrenovated and then renovate it yourself, you can probably shave a little bit off that, but it is quite difficult to find those properties as well. But you do need to make a considerable investment in Kyoto. Unless the bottom falls out with a COVID type situation, there may be some deals that come up. So we had some clients do that during COVID, and they're looking pretty good right now.
All right, further questions? Raise your hands if you've got a question. Yes.
Jai, does your company's management services, is that restricted to Kyoto Prefecture or does it extend to Fukui and some of the surrounding prefectures?
We're doing Osaka, so Osaka's not a problem. It's very difficult to operate outside of major areas, which is the reality. So, you know, we do have people talk to us sometimes about, I have a dream of getting this property an hour out of Kyoto, I'm going to run a B&B. And so, you know, my response is, who's going to operate it? And because we can't do it, and no one's doing it out there. So unfortunately, that's the reality. It's just really hard to operate. You would basically have to operate it yourself if you go to those areas. So I think for anything rural, find the operator first before, and rather than assuming that there will just be one naturally there. We are having a look up north on this Kyotango area. I have some contacts up there. We're thinking about starting some operations up there. But yeah, at the moment, it's Kyoto, Osaka for the moment. And sorry, I'll just throw Nagano in on that. We'll be going in Nagano.
I think like we mentioned earlier, there are a handful of companies that could do nationwide remote management, but obviously performance is not going to be as good as somebody local. Veronica.
Not close. Okay. Okay. Also, regarding the rules in Kyoto, I just wanted to confirm regarding the house, materia that depends of the area they are, some of the renovation cannot be made and you must to have the approval from the kumiai, the people from the area and they have to approve every single renovation you're making in those kind of houses, sometimes the historical houses.
Yeah, historical, right? Yeah, so for example, the one that I had on the screen before with the round window in that classic Kyoto shot, that is a historically restricted area, but it's a really small part of Kyoto, and that area is prohibitively expensive anyway. So unless you're trying to buy into central Higashiyama, you won't have that level of restriction. We've never come across those restrictions in the short-term rental space.
How about the terrace houses? Do they require special licensing or compliance?
Not really, no. But nothing like what was described.
And the approvals are coming from, and licensing perhaps, is it coming from or rather, do you need permission from a chonaikai? Or something like that.
No, it's a city doing the licensing, but sometimes they can make you sign these agreements with the neighborhood.
I see.
Which is, it's not so much of a legal regulatory thing, but to keep the peace that you promise you'll do X, Y, and Z.
It's a little bit less restrictive than perhaps a apartment complex with the kumiai and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, that's right. And in Kyoto, apartments are all just NG. So hence the reason why people are going for the standalone houses.
Any more hands? Yes, sorry.
Do you have, is there this concept of what we Americans would call grandfathering? So once you have the license, you can sleep pretty good at night that it's not going to be revoked in the future? Provided that you're doing a responsible job managing it, or is there always kind of this fear of, oh my God, there's another new regulation that's going to put us out of business?
The answer is yes and no. So there was one big change they made in 2020, which was a huge issue for us that was not grandfathered. So it ruled out a bunch of properties, the non-Machia properties. Yeah, that was very unfair for investors. And then turns out a few years later, they wound it back anyway and brought in this Minbaku law. So it was really all for nothing. Now it seems like with the Machias, there's a lot of grandfathering, there's a lot of protection. And they've actually recently reduced the hurdle, which is nice for a change, where you can pass your license on to someone else. So previously you had to get a new license. And therefore, if there was any law change in between, you might not be able to get that new license. Now you can do a name change. So actually reduce the hurdle a little bit. Thank God.
What's the most in-demand rate bracket in Kyoto?
there is no official data on that, but I can give you an opinion. But I think, like, maybe if I change the question a little bit and recommend a rate bracket, it would be that what we call the premium range, which would be the 45,000-50,000 kind of range. I think that's performing really well, and you can, you know, if something should happen, you could drop your price a little bit and fill it. Whereas if you're at the bottom and the market goes sour, you might just be empty.
Are you fairly bullish about the future from now? Are you actively looking for more inventory at that premium level? And how do you feel? Like, for me in Tokyo, there's not enough at that premium level. I don't want to look at anything that's in that, like, because there's just too much happening. But at that premium level, there's not enough in Tokyo. Are you seeing the same thing in Kyoto? Are you actively looking for more inventory?
Yep, good question. And I mean, there's a lot of points to cover in a response here, but the short answer is yes, absolutely. You know, we're feeling fantastically well. It's never been better. April is our best month ever. And, you know, I'll take unlimited premium level Machia properties. Of course, that's just not possible because it's a finite market. But, you know, very happy to onboard, are actively onboarding. We are trying to focus on that premium level range. We think that's where the smart play exists. You know, this does require a certain level of investment, but it also means that those investors are professional and they're considered rather than trying to make a quick buck and trick someone or something. And, you know, higher quality renovations also going to last a lot longer. So I think it's a much smarter play. Yeah, in terms of the market, you know, we're 40 million, government target is 60. That indicates that all things going well, we should be creeping upwards. But I'd like to remind everyone, it's not a straight line and that, you know, times are pretty good right now. But that's not always the case for tourism. And actually looking at our data right now, the last couple of weeks, 2 weeks ago, I saw our reservations drop to 80% year on year. And last week they dropped to 55. So I'm assuming that is due to the current uncertainties in the market at the moment. And perhaps people are thinking about whether they want to book that future trip. So hopefully it's an aberration. But yeah, you know, it's good times right now, but it's not always quite this good.
Thank you, Donald Trump and Xi Jinping, right?
Just to follow up to that, how many other people are getting into the market in Kyoto? Like, are you seeing a lot of competition? Or I see a lot of people here in Tokyo doing it badly, as in just dumping a whole bunch of, you know, low-level, three-star generic into the market. But are you seeing that? Are you seeing a lot more investment in Kyoto?
There's definitely a lot of entrance into the market. It's not all in the middle or at the top. I think it's coming in at all levels. You know, when I do look, the people who are not booked seem to be all the lower level stuff outside of the town. So I don't know, the market will dictate itself. I think the people who come in with the wrong product will not make any money and just exit over time. But it's interesting, Tracy, that you say you want to focus on the premium. And actually, as a management company, like, we need to have properties that generate a certain amount of money for us to be able to cover our costs. So it's very difficult to run a business with lower quality properties that don't generate that revenue. It's just a business reality. And you might be able to find some operator who doesn't have a good understanding of business who will take your property on. But I'm not sure how well that's going to go in the long term, to be honest.
One question from the stream. Sorry, I think you answered it, but I'll just confirm. Is your Nagano branch mainly focusing in areas near Hakuba, like you mentioned, Zaomadarao, Myoko, or are you planning to expand further in Nagano?
Yeah, no, it would be the areas that you mentioned, Ziv, and particularly more the Mataraw and Nozawa rather than Hakuba, which is kind of already going reasonably well. I think the big opportunities are the other one we feel like at the moment, with a bit of Miyoko in there as well. So
Miyoko is already blown up, and Mataraw is definitely coming soon, I think.
That's right. Get your bids in now.
Any further questions? We're on break time now, so you can carry on as long as he can handle it.
Hi, how you doing? I'm from Shiga, actually, so I'm pretty close by. I was wondering, what is the profile of your foreign buyers? Because obviously this is sort of the higher end of what most individuals are going to be able to come up with cash only. Are they getting loans somehow, or are these family offices or something that you're working with?
Yeah, so the reality is that it's really difficult to get loans for these properties, even if you're a Japanese company that specifically deals with these properties, e.g. my company. The banks won't support us. So yeah, that's the reality. It's tough to get loans unless you can arrange it somehow yourself with some kind of, you know, existing relationship. So a lot of cash buyers for us. In terms of profile, we have a lot of Americans, we have Australians lately, Europeans, French, Taiwanese, a few Chinese, real mixture for us. We can service all those nationalities, but everybody seems to be coming in and like they're quite serious, fairly well-off investors and now coming back for seconds, a lot of them. So it's nice to see.
One more from the stream. If I'm looking to purchase a property through Shiki Real Estate, what kind of partnership model do you offer for investors? Is it more hands full service management model, or do you offer co-investment structures or profit sharing arrangements?
We do full management only. So it gets very messy if you don't do that. In terms of like fitting out the property, if investors have particular desire to want to select some things, we're okay with that. But it's actually easier if we just pick everything. We've done it 100 times. It's you know, like to think to know we know what we're doing. In terms of management fee, we take a revenue share only for these types of properties. There's quite a lot of cost involved with this type of operation, a lot more than what people would imagine, being inefficiently spread out all over the town. So, you know, the fee is enough to cover that. But yeah, we have a standard fee, for that. For hotels, we have a different arrangement and it's on a case by case, basis.
Any more questions? Got one more.
You know, I was going to ask about Osaka.
Whatever.
So, you know, are you representing many people in Osaka?
No, not so many. We have 6 properties. Prior to COVID, we had 13.
Okay. And apart from like Dotonbori and Minami, is there any other places where you'd expect a higher ADR?
So, you know, if I'm honest, my knowledge about Kyoto is a lot higher than Osaka just because of the data we're getting. Although I lived in Osaka for 8-9 years, so got a, you know, fair feel for the town. Our best performance is Nakazaki-cho in the middle of town. So location is again super, you know, tied in, although the price is higher. So if you can get something that you feel is mispriced in a good location, that's how you lock in the real wins. That easier said than done. Otherwise, try and pick something like, we got some stuff in Kanzaki-gawa, which has turned out to be in terms of performance, pretty good because you can just get a taxi from the Shinkansen. So those kinds of things, you can kind of jump the gun a little bit. And, you know, if you can identify something that other people miss, that's where you can generate return.
I think Nishinariku and Tennoji was the place to, you know, a number of years ago. Cheap.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, correct. Thanks, everybody. Appreciate it.